Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Killer Harvest by Tanya Stowe. Can she stop a deadly crop virus from ending up in the wrong hands? Biologist and single mom Sassa Nilsson just witnessed her mentor's brutal murder by environmental extremists. Now she's the last link to a deadly pathogen they plan on unleashing and their number one target. But can handsome Border Patrol agent Jared DeLuca shield Sassa and her baby long enough to find a cure before the entire world faces the unthinkable consequences?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm glad you join me. Today I have with me Tanya Stowe. She is a Christian fiction writer with an unexpected edge. We may have to talk about that later, Tanya. And she fills her books with the unusual mysteries and exotic travel, even a murder or two. So thank you for being with me today, Tanya.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Okay, so now I have to ask, what is the unexpected edge in your Christian fiction?
I kind of bounce around in a lot of genres and in a lot of places, and I like to explore the unusual. So that tends to come out in my books. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. My listeners, tell me if you like that answer or not when you hear it. So, writing romantic suspense, besides being, it's a very popular genre, so it's been fun to write in it. But we get to do some kind of fun things, I think, in our book, such as kill people. I'm talking about characters. Everyone knows this. So let's talk about, what is the weirdest way someone has died or been killed in one of your novels?
Well, I have to say that the absolute most weirdest one for me to come up with is in my next book, and it's called Killer Harvest. And since it isn't out, I don't really want to say too much, but I will say that it happens in a cemetery at night, and there's an open grave.
So, okay, you just like invoked every horror movie ever.
pretty much.
Was that on purpose? How did you research this method? I mean, you don't have to name the method, but how did you research that?
I didn't really research it. The reason that it evolved is because I had a character in this story that seemed invincible and unkillable and unstoppable. And there were multiple ways that the hero and heroine had to keep combating him and his minions. And he just seemed almost like the robot from the Terminator.
Mm.
And so coming up with a way to kill him was really tough. And I finally kind of settled on something that, in all honesty, was quite simple.
Yeah. And isn't it right? Because you want it to be believable. I mean, we've all read books, seen movies, watched TV, and you're like, seriously, that's how they died?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense to the plot. And I think that you have to, it has to be realistic, because there are some of those, TV shows that they feel like you just kept trying to get weirder and weirder and weirder. You're like, really? People, people die in mundane ways.
Exactly.
And they can be murdered in the same way, too.
Exactly. And that's why it just seems so right for this particular bad guy to end in this very simple way. And it was right. But it turned out to be really weird. And we have a group of ladies that I go to breakfast with that are actually friends of my parents. So they're elder ladies. And I call them the Bisbee Breakfast Club ladies. And I asked them to help me find a way. And they did.
I hope you didn't ask him too closely. How do you know that?
No, I didn't.
You probably don't want to know. You probably don't want to go there. So have you ever regretted killing off a character while we're on the subject of murder? Have you ever regretted having a character die in one of your books?
I haven't so far in, I'm working on my sixth or seventh romantic suspense. And for the most part, most of those characters have been pretty bad guys. You know, I mean, I'm happy for them to finally get their comeuppance. But I do have a serial killer story coming up soon that I've been plotting out. And I end up making him kind of sympathetic, and not sympathetic as much as tragic. He's a tragic character. I can't help but feel kind of sorry for him. He needs to go, but I can't help feeling he will need to go for sure. But
right.
I can see where, you know, when I delve into the character and develop him a little bit more, it will be harder for me to kill him off.
Right.
That sounds terrible.
No, I think I think we do become attached to our characters. And one of the reasons, you know, even our bad guys, or bad gals. And I think one of the reasons we should, you know, feel some connection with them is because we're all flawed human beings. Even the good people have things that we'd rather maybe not have a light shined on in a moment, you know. So I think it's important when we think about our characters is to make them not that one dimensional where they're easy to hate. Give that little bit of attention, right? So his tragic path, I mean, whatever makes him tragic for your, you know, potential serial killer here, I mean, that's truth, right? Because even, you know, even the potential what we would call like kind of bad people, you know, they can have some good qualities to them because that's what makes us all human, which I think makes it even more interesting when we write, you know, romantic suspense because, you know, you kind of have to have those flaws and the reader has to, you know, maybe not sympathize, but kind of maybe understand a little bit about why
exactly.
They did this.
I agree. There needs to be a connection sometimes. And it makes it more emotive when you are connected to that person. You understand why they have to go and why maybe the hero or heroine gave them a second and maybe even a third chance, you know. So,
right, exactly. But sometimes, you know, they're still so bad and you're like, okay.
It's done. It's over.
It's done.
He needs to go. He's definitely going to need to go. But
well, I hope you have fun killing him off. So eventually,
I hope so too.
Yeah.
I'm going to get there. That's going to be an interesting story to work my way through for sure.
So how do you, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, finding ways to kill our characters and how, and that's part of the reason that we need to be accurate. You know, you can't have them killed in a way that actually wouldn't kill them or wouldn't make sense. But how do you ensure that your books are accurate?
I do a lot of research, a lot. And my husband and I are full-time RV travelers.
Oh, lovely.
It is kind of lovely. I live in a wonderful motorhome. And before everyone starts feeling sorry for me, I have a washer and a dryer, two bathrooms, and a king-size bed. So don't feel sorry for me.
Oh, I wasn't feeling sorry for you at all. I thought that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And what makes it really wonderful for me is that I actually get to travel to the spots that I'm writing about. And that's how I get my inspiration, by the way. We've visited some fascinating places, and it's just been wonderful to be able to get into the area, to feel what's unique about it, to pinpoint some of those unique things and incorporate them into the book. And that's exactly where my ideas come from and where my inspiration comes from. But after that, I have to hit the web or books or people and start really, you know, fleshing out whether or not it could happen or how it should happen. But finding that really unique telltale place is something that I really enjoy. With Killer Harvest that's coming out, I grew up in California. I lived on the beach, but we spent our summers water skiing here in the Central Valley, actually in Kingsburg, where the story is set. So coming up with a suspense novel in the middle of beautiful vineyards and orchards and rivers was kind of hard to do, but I did it. I managed it. And I just wanted to portray the unique characteristics of California's Central Valley because it's so different from other parts of California. So those are the things that jump out at me when I'm traveling and make the story for me, make the story.
Right. And it is, you know, we do need to know the areas that we're writing with. You know, thank goodness for the internet, though. I mean, it's really been, I mean, you can look up, get pictures, you can do the Google Street View. And I did that for one of my books just to make sure, oh, yeah, they can actually drive down this street. you know, is actually the, you know, and where it goes and trying to find that sort of thing is just so very helpful because, you know, we can't all pile in our RV and go driving around the country, Tanya.
as much as I would love to. Nobody knows that better than me because I'm actually an all-timer and I published my first book way back in 1994. So I was kind of pre-internet and researching was like slashing my wrists open because I had four small children. I couldn't load up in my RV.
Right.
So, you know, this is just a dream come true to be able to access things at my fingertips and be there at the same time. So I know that very well. I do. I appreciate it.
So now what is your, now that brings me to, cause you're traveling, probably with your spouse, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what does your husband think about your writing romantic suspense? Does he like, oh, come on, do we have to pull over and look at this?
No, he's at, you know, I've always wanted to be a writer. I wrote my first book when I was 11 years old. So he kind of came into this situation knowing what he was going to get into. So, you know, I he's been really supportive in that aspect. And, you know, because, excuse me, we had four children. So at one point in time, you know, I couldn't work and I was at home with the kids and everything. And he was really always support. I like to say he supported my addiction back in the day.
I love that.
So
that's great.
It's so very true.
Well, and we need that family support, I think, to, you know, to help us when we get discouraged and to help us just keep pressing on.
And my family knows that they may be at any given time the subject. The names will be changed, but they could be included in my book.
Oh, no.
Oh, of course, I do really check with them, but they know it may go into my book. In fact, I have quite a few of them now say, Mom, that's worth writing about.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, I wrote before, you know, I switched to more fiction. I wrote a book on parenting, on sibling rivalry, actually. And I have four children as well. Mine are still at home. But I did talk to them. I said, here's the stories I'm going to put in the book. Okay, they weren't all painting them in like horrible, you know, picture. A lot of them were pretty sweet. I said, so just so you know, there wasn't that many, but there was a few.
Right.
They weren't too
and
happy.
You have
but
to ask.
Yeah, we did. They were fine with it. They were fine, especially because like most of them were fairly, you know, weren't too embarrassing. And actually, a couple of them were actually really, you know, complimentary of them as siblings. But it was pretty funny. I haven't put anyone in my fiction book yet. Although maybe I'll threaten that. That might be a good way to get them to behave. I'll have to think about that.
I think that's a good pre-lesson.
Yes, I
behave
think so.
Or else, right?
Or else you might be in the book, and hey, who knows what you're gonna what kind of character you're gonna be?
That's right.
Oh my
that's
goodness.
Right.
The possibilities are endless. All right. Well,
I agree.
We are almost at the end of our time. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about you as a writer or any of your books coming out, Tanya?
Oh, that's all right. I just would like them to pick it up and so they can read to the end and see how that all fits together and let me know. I love contacting people through my newsletter because I get to talk about my travels and get feedback from people. And that's my favorite way to connect with readers. So if they find that if your listeners enjoyed the ending of Killer Harvest, I'd love to know.
All right. And you can find all of Tanya's social media and website links with this blog. So go check it out and let her know if you like the way she killed off the character. That's what I want to know. I'm going to have to go get this book so I know how your character died there. So thank you for being on my show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking to Tanya Stowe. She is a Christian fiction author. She writes books with the unusual, mysteries, exotic travel, even a murder or two. And her new book is Killer Harvest, and you can find out more information about that with this podcast. And we'll hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Killer Harvest by Tanya Stowe. Sassa stared at her mentor. His wife June was missing? Sam was afraid for Sassa and her baby? He stumbled over his words, searching for a way to explain. Over his shoulder, Sassa spotted a man walking toward them. Was this Sam's Jared? He wasn't wearing a uniform. He wore a black leather jacket, black pants, and sunglasses, even though the sun had barely risen. He looked odd. Something about his hair. It looked fake. Even his skin appeared almost waxen as he marched toward them relentlessly, like a robot. A walking, live robot. Like the Terminator from the movie. Sam noticed her distraction and turned. He gasped and stepped toward the stranger.
No!
Without hesitation, the robotic newcomer pulled a knife from beneath his leather jacket, lunged, and stabbed the older man. Sassa stood frozen as Sam cried out and bent over in the man's leather-clad arms. The Terminator man pulled his knife from Sam's chest. As the professor sagged to the ground, the guy grabbed the strap of Sam's laptop bag, cut it free of his shoulder, and spun, marching for the sliding glass doors of the exit. Sassa watched the whole scene, frozen and speechless. She wasn't able to make a sound until Sam hit the floor. She screamed his name and dropped beside him. Blood flowed from her friend's chest and bubbled from his mouth. Sassa cried out again, knowing Sam was mortally wounded.
"Call 911!" she screamed at the other passengers moving toward them. "Someone, call for help!"
Sam struggled to speak to her.
"Don't talk, Sam. Help us on the way."
He shoved his wrist at her, the one holding his ID bracelet. She bent over him.
"Please, don't move."
Tears fell onto his wrist and the bracelet, tears she didn't even know she was shedding. Sam shook his head again and tried to form a word. She leaned forward to hear him whisper,
"Yours."
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.